We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Fans, how you doing? It's your boy Jonathan Macri with you for another episode of the Knicks Film School podcast, coming at you at the end of, I don't know if I'd say the most memorable week in recent Knicks history, because there have been some memorable ones, but it's definitely the most positive memorable one that we've had in quite some time here. And to come on here and celebrate and to talk about some of his recent stuff, and really just here's why I have this person on. The sound of his voice makes me feel like I've won the lottery, and I feel like this week I have won the lottery because the Knicks, we're going to get into it, you know, maybe aren't terrible. And so I wanted to give myself this treat. And so the treat for me, the treat for you, you know him from Twitter, you know him from the Strickland, all the way over from the other side of the pond, Mr. Jack Huntley. Jack, hello, sir.
Hello. Lots of pressure on my voice. I hope this is okay. I'm just speaking.
You just got to talk. It's just talking. It's just talking.
Yeah, I can do that. I can do that. And, for once, we might actually be talking about positive things, which is,
well, when we talked, it feel. I mean, listen, jokes aside, the time really is all running together. You could tell me that I last had you on this podcast in May. You could tell me I last had you on this podcast in October, and I wouldn't.
Honestly,
I wouldn't know.
The season was over. I'm pretty sure the season was over.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So it was somewhere
the fall,
in the
maybe
murky depths of 2020.
Well, here's what it was. It was after all of us, and I think this is actually going to segue nicely into your piece, which I really can't wait to get into. It was after we had all had way too much time to talk to other people, talk to ourselves, in the mirror or just at clouds. About just all the sorts of things that this team could maybe do at some point.
All the possibilities, yeah.
All the possibilities, right? But here's what they all involved. They all involved pretty wholesale changes, right? And they all went on two assumptions. And I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to say, I think everybody was on the same page about this. One, some way, shape, or form, Julius Randle needed to be the F out of here. And number two, the Knicks, as currently constituted, were bad. And they weren't just a little bad. They were like, I think I came on this podcast and I was like, other than maybe Detroit, they have the worst top line talent in the league. I said lots of things, lots of words.
it's very interesting to look back, because I remember now the podcast, we talked a lot about Chris Paul. We talked about Chris Paul versus Fred VanVleet.
Yeah.
We talked about, you know, the most important thing is to get rid of Elfrid Payton and Julius Randle and just create some space around RJ, which, you know, I'm not off that.
Well, you shouldn't be.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, it's incredible how much things change and how much attention we give to things that are ultimately meaningless and not the important things, which obviously in a pandemic when the season's cancelled and there's nothing to talk about is quite reasonable. We needed to do anything we could to stay sane. But yeah, Julius Randle.
I laugh when I hear his. You know what's so funny also? So we're recording this on Thursday night. I recorded with our mutual colleague, Dallas Amico.
What a guy.
It's awesome. I think if we matched your voice with his like basketball brain, which like no offense to you or anybody else I've had on this podcast. It's like the size of this room. It's the size of Austin Rivers' balls. Anyway.
Substantial.
Yes, it's substantial. I think we would just have like the perfect human. In any case, so I recorded with him on Tuesday night and then starting Wednesday morning, woke up, checked the old Twitter or whatever. All of the Knicks pieces were coming out from all the national media. Like that was the day that the bandwagon opened its doors a little bit. And all of the articles, of course, were about Randle.
And he's justified it. He deserves it. I'm glad that it's happening. It's just from where we were or where we thought we were, it's quite unexpected, you know, because I think I was... The origin of the piece I did and just my general confusion about Randle is that, you know, we were so sure, or at least I was so sure that he didn't fit. And the version of him that we were going to get was, even if it was better, was not going to be, you know, just completely mind-blowingly different. It wasn't going to be this. And even if he comes back down to earth a bit,
yeah,
it's wild. It's great, but we were very wrong.
Well, I was about to say I don't toot my own horn that often. I toot my own fucking horn all the time. I live to toot my own horn. Who am I kidding? I did write because I one of my like 8,000 preseason columns. I think I wrote something along the lines of like here are the things that the Knicks need to do, and one of them was trade Julius Randle. But in my defense, I wrote, I don't actually think it's that necessary from a basketball perspective, because I looked at the numbers with him and Mitch last year, with him and RJ last year, and I'm like, there is clearly a way that this can work. I was just worried about it from a standpoint of rookie comes in playing his same position, who's clearly going to get a lot of attention and minutes, we thought, because what the hell do we know? There's no way that that's going to end well for a guy who's the highest paid player on the team now, like, by far, and fancied himself last year a star. And again, my, how things have changed.
I mean, this is the interesting thing is what has changed. It's not like, I mean, Tibbs was talking about this the other day in the press conference, and I thought it was interesting. The main thing that he said is, you know, he's coming to camp, you know, who's in great shape. So that's made a massive difference. And by God, he needs to be. I mean, I get tired just watching him at the moment.
He's, oh my God,
carrying such a load. He's playing so hard. It's ridiculous. I mean, I hope it continues, but, you know, it's his decision-making, you know, it's all the low hanging fruit. And in hindsight, you can see it, like, you know, maybe don't run into 17 people at once. That's probably a good idea. You know, he could always pass. He was always an absolute beast. Like, he's a massive human. So that helps. Like, it's his decision making. And obviously, the big difference, I think, from last year to this year is the offense is completely designed to enable him to make quick decision after quick decision, get downhill. Like Dallas said the other day, loads of little advantages. And they just over and over and over again. And even last night against Utah, you know, I thought this matchup's terrible. Like in midway into the second quarter, it was like, what are we doing? How are we going to, you know, this is just.
Well, they had that. It was like
a matchup.
Yeah, it was like an eight or so minute stretch where I think they scored like 7 points, or maybe it was like eight points in 7 minutes, something where, you could tell that it seemed like they were getting to that place where, I think I mentioned this like when I did the post game, that they were just looking to figure out how to get the ball to Randle so he could initiate the offense. And Utah was trying to take that initial entry away.
Yeah.
And so then there was this domino. So, yeah, I mean, it's, look, like you said, it's, there's still things to quibble about, but when he gets the ball, it's like I think there's a patience about him now. And when he does decide to call his own number, you're less mad about it now because it feels like there is more of a process at play where it's like, okay, I have to remind these guys that, meaning the opposing team, that I can still do some shit when I need to.
It's usually at the end of a possession or like, so Kenny Payne, I thought it was really interesting yesterday. So he was on the post-halftime interview with Rebecca Harlow. And he just said, it was like, he was so matter of fact about it in the way, you know, what's wrong? Well, it's pretty obvious. You know, our offense all season has been, you know, you make multiple passes, you get multiple lane touches, you spread out and you do that again and you get flow and you go multiple passes, multiple lane touches and you go and you go and you go and you just wear them down and the shot or the advantage gets progressively bigger. And he said in the first half, we were just doing one pass shot or no pass shot. And you can see it in the second half. They just absolutely bullied the paint. They were just like relentless.
Which is what they're built to do, essentially, with their personnel.
Yeah. And that's it's hugely different. I can't remember. So, you know, with this year, we're fourths in the league in drives per game. We're third in passes off those drives. So, you know, and we're, what was the fifth in offensive miles traveled. Last year, we were 23rd. We were 18th in drives per game.
That stat you just said, I love that. I saw that the other day, too. And I think I wrote it somewhere. The miles traveled thing. It's fantastic.
Yeah. So it's like we're moving quick and we're moving often and it's not complicated, but it works.
But they're not even trying to make any, they're not trying to hide what they're trying to do. Tibbs has said it. Kenny Payne even said it during the halftime. Yeah. He's like, we're trying to get multiple people to come to the ball, which like once you get Julius with the ball, eventually you're going to get doubled. And I think Utah was, it was funny because at first Gobert was kind of bugging him out. I think Gobert like mind, you know, fucked with him a little bit at first because he's giving him room and Randle like took a few threes and that didn't go so well. But then like he was better in the second half. He was quicker with his decisions. Yeah.
Way too much respect. And I think, you know, so this is a part of the Randle thing and it's also part of the Payton thing, you know, as well, because we really, I can't speak for everyone, I fetishize shooting massively. Like it cures all ills. It's so obvious with this team. It's like, you know, we've had so many years of it where we've been awful. It's just like, okay, I don't care all the peripheral considerations. If we can't shoot, then that's the thing I'm going to focus on. But really, Tibbs is a guy that sort of, he's going to maximize what he has. And as soon as this was the roster, this is the way he has to play. And we are a bruising team. Like Mitchell Robinson yesterday, I mean, you tweeted earlier that we were going to talk about Mitch at some point.
Oh, yeah.
He looked so confident physically. Like he was just dominating space everywhere. And, you know, with him and Randle, I don't know if there are many front courts in the NBA who are going to come away from that feeling good, like not hurting and bruised and just not wanting to see the Knicks for as long as possible, because those two guys are beasts. Like they're absolute monsters.
And you didn't mention the other guy who is obviously he's had an up and down year. But RJ Barrett, really arguably given the position he well, I guess there's some question even what position is he going to be moving
he's
forward.
A wing. Because he's a wing.
He's a wing, but at the same time, who you put next to him on the wing and the size of that guy dictates the size of the guy that the opposing team is going to put on him. And really, that's the guy that for him to maximize what I think his career could be, he's the one that has to leave black and blues on guys who are trying to guard him.
I think he is. I think the problem with RJ, and you can see it a little bit yesterday, you know, obviously he's very up and down. That's fine. He's young.
He's 20.
You know, and he's in a, you know, let's be honest, it's a terrible situation. He needs shooting. Like,
yeah,
I said 1 minute ago that I fetishized shooting, that I'm going to go on the shooting rant again.
Please.
But you can see it with RJ. When he drives, especially when he's playing badly, he pushes it, like he kind of forces his shot, he hunts his shot. And against some teams, that's fine. Against Utah yesterday, it was not going to work. Because
it was like a force field around the rim when
he needed to channel a little bit of a new Julius Randle and kick it. Like there was a few times when Knox was wide open in that third quarter. And I thought it was good that RJ sat the fourth because, you know, he was tired. It wasn't going well. And obviously, Austin Rivers was quite good. That was quite a good decision.
We could get to him as well. But the thing we should note, because I have said some unkind things about RJ Barrett in the past on this podcast, I don't think it's tunnel vision. I think it's a matter of what you're talking about, which is that he feels like he needs to be in such a rush to get to the rim because that's the only way that there's a chance that he's going to have a sliver of space, which if there was more shooting on the floor, he would not need to be in such a rush because we know RJ has vision. And I think we also know that RJ is not a selfish player.
He can make the right read. And it's like a very minor quibble. I love RJ. I think he's going to have games like this. It's a fine needle to thread with Randall, with Mitch, with Peyton, it's difficult.
but
he played really well. 100%.
Since the first two games, he's with the exception of the Quickly game against who do we beat two games ago now? They're all
Indiana.
There's so much good stuff happening. It's like it's crazy. The Quickly when Quickly came in and had a great fourth quarter and finished the game. That was Atlanta. Yes. Sorry. See, there's so many good wins. I can't even keep track of them. other than the Peyton's beginning to the Atlanta game, since the first two games of the season, he's been quite good at what he does, but what he's good at does not necessarily equate good things for RJ Barrett. So
And that's the thing. Like maybe it's good for the Knicks, but I don't think it's a coincidence that when Elfrid Payton is playing really well and getting into the paint and, you know, putting pressure on the rim, RJ is somewhat struggling.
Yeah.
And I would like us, like, I think the Jazz are a really good proxy for us, actually. Because they've got, you know, this big rim running center who can't shoot. Yeah. They've got kind of a dynamic, obviously very dynamic wing in Mitchell, who's much better than RJ. But, you know, there's a facsimile little proxy there.
They
play this like movement style. They're like second in drives per game. They try and put you in the blender. What they do, they take Conley out at the 7 minute mark and bring in Joe Ingles. And I was just, as soon as it happened, I was like, oh, we should do that with Quickly. Just get a quick pull on Peyton. He's still starting. He gets a good 5 minute run. And then you get a little bit with Randall, RJ, Mitch, and Quickly. And it just loosens things up because Elfrid can run the second unit. I'm resigned to him playing, but just give me a little bit of Quickly and RJ.
He should play. And I like how we haven't even really talked about your article yet, which I am going to get to because I think there was a larger...
The next one, who cares?
There's a larger philosophical point that you brought. It's rarely that I read anything about the NBA, at least, that really makes me think. And this made me think a lot, probably more than it should have. It's an interesting situation because, okay, Peyton starts. Peyton's going to get... I think we're acknowledging that Peyton's going to start.
It's going to happen.
It's for this time.
For now.
Okay.
For now.
Okay. So you say, all right, fine. Either give him the quick hook or give RJ the quick hook. Just set it up such that RJ has minutes with Quickly and Rivers and or Burks, you know, multiple other shooters. Okay, yep. Fine. We're doing that. But then you get to the next stage of this, which is that, well, if it's RJ and Quickly and whatever, and no Randall, I feel like those teams, there is just a little bit too little of gravity. Like somebody, like they, it's, they need
to soak up.
Yeah, they, you know, they need Randall on the, that's why it's great. Like he's averaging whatever he's averaging, but they need him on the floor.
Yeah, I mean, I think RJ can handle some of that. I think pairing him with a guy, you know, like Burks, or
I wonder if that'll help.
Like, because I mean, let's be honest, our offense hasn't, you know, we haven't been healthy.
Yeah.
One, there's the main thing that's getting a lot of play with the Knicks at the moment with this good start is, you know, the defense is unsustainable, the shot profile is unsustainable. We're getting lucky. That's where it's going to change. That's where we're going to come back down to earth. And I think that's getting the headlines, but like we haven't been healthy, and we haven't been healthy in a way that's extremely important. Like not having Quickly, Burks, and Rivers healthy at the same time is huge. And
listen, Obi Toppin, I know he wasn't any great shakes in the preseason, but the guy is probably going to help them when he's here.
He's probably quite good. You know, he can shoot. You know, he's a different animal to Randall. You know, he's a different look. Noel not being healthy, like, we have been decimated, to be honest.
Did you say Frank?
And Frank as well, of course. Yeah, you know. I still love Frank. Obviously.
Listen, we're always gonna like Frank. It's a matter of like, but you do have to wonder, would he be getting?
I think he'd make a massive difference. Like, I mean, not so much on the offensive end, but okay. Well, so, what was I? And then, yeah, so we've got health. Massive caveat on health. And the schedule we've had has been ridiculous.
Did you see Zach Cram of the Ringer tweeted that out today, that they've had the hardest schedule in the league so far?
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
hardest schedule in basketball.
What are we even doing? We've had like half a roster. We've had the hardest schedule in basketball, and we're, you know,
and
5-3. It's crazy.
You know, and it's, to me, the 3-point shooting, it's interesting because if you're watching the games, and obviously I know you've watched all the games just like I have, it early on, it felt like they were getting a little lucky. But like last night, Utah started 7-for-14 from deep. Mm-hmm. And by any measure, the Knicks should have been shot out of that game. And they battled and clawed and scrapped and all the words just enough to stay in it. They got right on the verge. They were never down by 20. They were down 18 a couple times and never got down by 20. Scrapped and clawed the whole thing. Made a little run at the end of the first half. And then in the second half, did Utah start missing some more shots? Yeah, but like it's not reasonable to expect a team to just continue hitting threes at a certain rate. And by the end of the night, Utah was what? They were 31% from deep, 31 and change. They're usually 36 and change. Okay, great. That's two shots.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Two threes.
Yeah, I mean,
would they have made a difference at the right time? I guess probably, maybe. But at the same time, like you look at, again, there's all these other factors that you're bringing up. So I agree with you. Luck has a little bit to do with it, but I think maybe a bit much is being made of that.
They
still have to figure out how to take away the rim, but that's a story for another
day. Well, it's an interesting topic we can get. I mean, there's many interesting topics.
There's so many. That's the thing. It's so nice to actually talk about a good basketball team.
I was freaking.
So we keep talking about this piece that you wrote. It's called Julius Randle's Metamorphosis is a lesson for all of us in how little we know. And I really love it because here's why it got me thinking. I think to me, it feels like more than any other sport. But then again, I don't pay that close of attention to other sports. And maybe we do this in all sports. I shouldn't generalize. Whatever. In the NBA, when we talk about the NBA, every season, we know what's going to happen, right? We always know. We always know exactly what we know who's going to be the best players. We know who's going to be like the second tier players. We know. And then just literally year after year after year, shit happens. And it's just like, oh, who knew that Jimmy Butler, who Tibbs seemed to have a fetish for playing 48 minutes a game, was going to turn into an all NBA level player. Like I remember that, like, that's just the first thing that came to my head, but this happens every year.
Yeah.
And your whole point is that we don't know any, not that we don't know anything, but like, we don't know nearly as much as we think we do.
We're very, and
yet we continue to tell ourselves that we know everything.
Yeah. And then we have a very quick memory when we are, you know, emphatically proven wrong. And it's interesting to look at why, like, you know, I was pretty wrong about Randle. I wanted to trade him. A lot of people wanted to cut him and, you know, but it's just interesting why. So what did we miss? What were the reasons for this? And I think there is a bit of a clue, like I said in the piece, Mike Miller had Randle playing well.
Yeah.
Like, he was getting...
Not this well, but well.
Yeah, of course. Like, it was a different offensive system. You know, it didn't have all the crazy, relentless turbo movement and drives, like death by a thousand drives. But, you know, he was productive. He was good. He was efficient. So, yeah, it's just a sort of a little slap around on the wrist for myself, just saying... But, and I'm trying to use it with Peyton as well, because now I'm like, Peyton sucks. I hate Peyton.
But here's the thing with Peyton.
The other side.
With Randle, we should all feel dumber because it's not like he's not coming out and shooting, you know, 40% from three, which is something that would have been, you know, crazy.
Unsustainable.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's actually down probably to about, he has, after last night. It's not great. But everything he's doing is he's done all of these things in segments. And if you're like, okay, well, is it a, and I really don't like this term, but like a basketball IQ issue. And no, that's not it either, because I never looked at Randle as a guy who had a low basketball IQ or like had a, maybe what's a better term, a bad feel for the game or something. It's just a guy who didn't choose to use the feel for the game that he had at all times. And it's just about willingness. And so we should have been able to, I'm factoring in me as well as everybody else. We should have been able to look and be like, wow, they got a guy like Tibbs and they brought his college coach in here, Kenny Payne. And they brought Johnny Bryan in here who were Dame Lillard and Donovan Mitchell swear by. It's like, I wonder if any of these people could get through to this guy. And they did.
Yeah. And it worked. You know, and it can't be underestimated the impact that the year that we're talking about that set us up for all these opinions, that obviously had a massive impact on the year that he's having now. Like, if you do terribly at something for a year, you're going to take a step back and be like, all right, you know, maybe I should try something slightly different or, and it's going to give you a little bit of a head start when someone asks you to buy into a new system. And then because it's got off to such a good start, it's a positive feedback loop immediately. And, you know, he's doing it again. But, it's great. I'm very much enjoying the new and improved Julius Randle. I don't actually think it's particularly unsustainable. Apart from his mid-range shooting, he's shooting like 56% from long mid-range, which is...
You know what, though?
Not gonna last, but...
Dirk
Randle, let's go.
But they're open shot. That to me isn't that nuts. Like, if 3-point shooting was above 40% or even like above Lee average, I would say that's crazy. The mid range shooting, I mean, yeah, it'll fall a little bit, but
he's got that shot, he can take that shot and it's useful.
Yeah,
especially he's like that on the left block when he drives right and he's got a bit of contact. He's got fouled like three or four times on that this year.
Yeah, correct. When he has a when he has a visual line to the basket and he could hold it for a minute. Peyton's different though, because Peyton, getting back to the shooting thing, Peyton's never going to be a shooter that you have to respect, and he's not like, just look at his shot. His shot's always going to be what it is. So he, even when he is having literally the best games that he's ever going to have, which I think he had one of them a couple nights ago, like it, the issues are still there. So I think that's different. The thing I wanted to ask you, and you touched on it briefly in the piece, is, you know, when you bring up these other guys, the Kevin Knox, you named Dennis Smith Jr. I think you named Frank Ntilikina. Like, if you had to bet, you know, a night's dinner and drinking on which one of these guys would be the most likely to be the next one to make us feel like, oh, we're all assholes because we didn't see this.
I put my money on Frank.
Really? Okay. Interesting.
Because I don't think it's going to be in New York, but I would put my money on Frank. I think so. We get drowned as fans in topics that we end up then overvaluing. So for Randall, it was his turnovers. He became his turnovers. For Elf, it's his shooting. He has become his inability to shoot. And for Frank, it's just weird. Like, is he a point guard? Is he not a point guard?
Which he's not.
He's just a young, good player who's bad at some things and good at other things.
Yeah.
But as like RJ now, he has not been in a situation where, you know, it's optimal for him. It's not to say that he's going to be an all-star or anything, but I think if you put him on a team with a clear-cut and well-rounded, like, offensive fulcrum, and don't ask him to run 50 pick and rolls a game and expect him to generate offense out of thin air, he'll be really good. I think he's a good kid. He works hard. I think he's going to have a role. Like, I think it's Zach Lowe that says, you know, his like ultimate like back of a napkin test for players is, can he play in a playoff series? You know, is he going to be in that rotation? And I can't see why Frank, you know, wouldn't be. He's a good defender. I think he's an improving shooter. He's got the only thing he can't do is just create off the dribble. But there's loads of players that can't do that.
And that's the most. Let me catch myself. I was going to say that's the most premium skill in the NBA. But at the same time, you could also then make the argument that it's the most overvalued skill, in the sense that if a guy's a wing player and doesn't have that ability, it's like you toss them aside. Unless they're obviously a dead eye shooter, which Frank has not yet proven to be, but like the first thing you said, he's a basketball player,
John. 100% from
I know. I listen.
He's 56 now or something. I think he's coming. You know,
I'm with you. It's so funny how the NBA works, because you got a guy like Julius Randle who's playing at literally almost an all NBA level, and a guy like Frank Ntilikina who may not be able to get in this rotation. And if you asked, like, and if you really looked at it, and you're like, okay, which of these two players would have a better shot at getting on the floor in the last 5 minutes of a finals game?
Ooh, juicy. This is the juicy. There's an argument.
Randall is at an All-NBA level right now because he has the ball in his hands, and that is how he derives his value.
Yeah.
Because of, we don't need to get into when you're a big man and you can't protect the rim, like, and you can't shoot, then like when a push comes to shove in like game seven of a high level playoff series, are you going to get played off the court? Whereas Frank, it's like, if he can knock down the three when he's open, we know he can, you know, I think
pound that, someone on defense. I mean, I think it's like Dallas was saying the other day, on this podcast, you know, he was saying that Frank as a point of attack defender, that's the easiest route to defensive improvement for this Knicks roster, is to find him minutes and incorporate him into the equation with Mitch. With Randall, like you were saying, I thought it was interesting last night when it was coming down into the guts of the game, and Donovan Mitchell was starting to do things and he was just getting wherever he wants, and he's like quite a clear cut that guy, end of the game, fourth quarter, he's going to get to his spot and do what he wants. And it was going to be interesting to see Randall try and do that in response, because it's not easy for him to you know, just trot up and get in his office and go to work. And then Austin Rivers just bailed him out and was ridiculous. But yeah, that was going to be, I thought that was going to be quite tough coming down the stretch, generate an offense through Randall when Utah is locked in and it's like high pressure.
Well,
it didn't matter in the end. But I think we'll come to a time or a couple of games when Randall tries to do that. That's going to be really interesting.
It is. And we just got not that it needed confirmation because Ian Bigley reported earlier today. But the Knicks have, as per Taj Gibson's agent, Mark Bartlestein, waived Omari Spellman and signed Taj Gibson. Well, actually, I'm pretty sure Taj's agent didn't tell Woj that they waived Omari Spellman. I'm pretty sure I got that from elsewhere. But in any case, welcome back, Taj.
I don't mind Taj. People are kicking off. I don't.
Oh, come on. It's like, dude, that guy.
He's good.
Gosh, watching him in the lot, just I would occasionally, the handful of times I got in the locker room last year, I'd keep an eye on him, just kind of go about his business and watch all the other chicanery going on around. And it's just I really felt bad for him because you could tell this guy just had been in.
Yeah.
You know, very different locker rooms throughout his career. And now he's coming back to a locker room that I think will be closer to the ones he had been on previously. So good for Taj. What I was going to say is I think this is one of those interesting situations. I mean, this is a good place for us to finish up it, where the take, if you take Alfred Payton out of the equation, right? Let's just for shits and giggles, right? And you just remove, let's assume a few more people are healthy, right? Let's assume Frank's healthy. Let's assume Obi Toppin gets healthy. Let's assume Alec Burks is healthy. And you just took Peyton out. I think there's a pretty decent, I think there was a pretty decent argument that the team gets worse in the interim. They would struggle initially to maybe find their footing at times because if you're going on the assumption that Dennis Smith Jr., despite your article professing that maybe we should give everybody a chance.
I said that was extremes.
Okay. So given that the Dennis Smith Jr. ship may have sailed.
Yes.
Just maybe. Then you're left in a situation where it's like, okay, yes, Julius Randle is your de facto point guard. But now in terms of like who is your nominal point guard, it's like, okay, you got your Austin Rivers, you got your Quickleys, you got your Franks, you got your RJ Barrett's, you got your Alec Burks, right? You got all these guys, but I wonder if they're, you know, 48 minutes of basketball is a long time. And that's if you don't go into overtime. And I wonder if there wouldn't be moments where it's like, man, the Knicks could really use a traditional point guard right now. And I want to hear your take on that because I have a feeling you may disagree. But it's the second point I just want to make quickly is that I do think that that would be best for the long run.
I agree that it would be best for the long run. And I believe, but do not know, that it would be better now as well. I think the combination of Frank Burks and Quickley Rivers are two extremely complementary twosomes. If you're looking for skill sets that can benefit both ends of the floor. And I think, you know, so the best version or the pluses that Peyton brings you are dwarfed by the two-way pluses that those two combinations bring. I don't know. I can't prove it. I don't think we're going to find out. I think Tibbs is going to play Elf and Elf's playing well, and that's fine. But I think it's a shame. Okay, so here's how I'll frame it. I'm not angry, like, watching Elf anymore. I'm kind of over it. Once he was signed, I hated the signing, and you can argue about the signing all you want. But once he's here, there's no reason to continue hating the signing every time you see him on TV. Yeah. It's like Tibbs. He's making the best of what he's got. So, you know, we've got to try and do that as well and see what would work. I would like for those two twosomes, Burks, Frank, and Quivers, to get a go. Just, you know, get a go where they don't feel like if they miss a shot, they're out. That's what I'd like. And I'd like to see how it turns out. But maybe we'll get it at some point this season. This season's going to be crazy. There's going to be players out all year.
Well, Tibbs can only play Elfrid Payton if he's here. And whereas I'm just throwing it out there. Whereas I have a very funny feeling, and every episode the Randall trade conversation it comes up inevitably, and I'm refusing to really get deep into the weeds yet because here's partially why. I think they are going to have an asking price that is so astronomically high for him. I don't think they're going to move him.
Yeah.
Before the deadline. Summer.
I can't see him being moved.
Well, because I think they're going to ask for you want the guy who's like a shoe-in for an all-star team? Okay, good. Let's see what pick you're giving me and what young player you're giving me.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe if I like both of those things enough, maybe I'll consider it. But, you know, and then Tibbs is going to be like over my dead body. And I think you'd say the same thing for Alec Burks, given what he's likely to actually realistically fetch. Payton, yeah. I think, is a different story.
Who because wants I want Payton? Who's signing him?
I
Magic now that Fultz is.
I was just about to say, man. Like, listen, they're 6-2. They know him. He seems like a good. He, by all accounts, he's a good locker room guy. The whole thing. And here's the thing about the Magic: they actually have some shooting. Yeah. So he would, to me, it's slot in. Like, if you just for argument's sake, if you put him into that starting lineup with Vooch. I mean, Aaron Gordon's never going to be a shooter, obviously. But, you know, they have Terrence Ross, who's been shooting flames out of his ass all year.
Yeah, Cole Anthony.
Yeah, Fournier, you know, could obviously keep defense. Like, that's the only thing I'm saying is that I could at least see a world where they, if someone was willing to offer a real something, not like a – I don't think that's the thing. Are they, so someone calls up and like, oh, yeah, we'll give you our – this second round pick that's likely to land in the 40s this year. Are they doing that move? Probably not.
Yeah.
You know, not by itself, maybe as a part of a something else, but
the deadline is going to be fascinating for a lot of things. Is. I mean, I just have no idea where Leon Rose and Co are going to see themselves, whether they're going to be buyers, sellers. I don't know. I mean,
well, if they're, I mean,
might be buyers, to be honest.
You know what? It's funny. I was thinking the last 48 hours about, like, I wonder who's going to be the first person who's going to write if the Knicks are buyers at the deadline.
I don't think we should do that, just to make it clear.
And who should they buy? And I'm like, oh shit, it's going to be you asshole. Meaning me. No, but we're now at the point, because it's such a condensed, it's the friggin' trade deadline is March. It's early March.
Yeah, I don't think the schedule's only out till the 3rd of March, isn't it?
Well, the schedule's only out, but they actually have said the trade deadline, which
I thought it was the 26th off the top of my head, but I don't know.
Oh, I wrote this. I forget when the date is, but they will have played 40 games by the trade deadline. So now we're sitting here and they've played 8 games. We are a fifth of the way there to the trade deadline. Now, that's a long, long way to go. But like, so they're 5-3.
Yeah.
You know,
if we're 500,
I was about to say if what we're seeing is real, and if they get to the 40 game mark, let's say they are, what if they're 18-22? For them to be 18-22 at the 40 game mark, that means, let's do some quick math in our heads. that means they would need to go 13-19. Did I do that right?
I'm going to leave that to you, mate. The maths is not.
I think, 13 and they would have to go 13-19. Okay. So 13-19, or let's just say, let's even say to make it nice round numbers, let's even say 12-20. Right. So you're talking two out of every 5 games, I think, maybe.
Yeah. We'll go with that.
let's go with that. Or where about? Whatever. 12-20, I could see this team going 12-20 over the next 32 games, can't you?
Yeah.
So, and if they go 12-20 over the next 32 games, guess what? They're going to be right in the thick of that play-in tournament.
So, I think, there's going to be discussions had about, there's a few guys like Terry Rozier, Buddy Hield, Zach LaVine, Victor Oladipo. I think those are the guys. And there's already been a bit of smoke on a few of them. There will be the chance to pull the trigger on at least one of those people. And it will be very interesting to see how hungry and or patient Leon Rose is when it comes to that. But we already go off the rails and start thinking about the future and crazy stuff when...
This is what happens with when you talk about the Knicks. It all comes back to what we got started with this discussion, which is... What are the changes that are gonna happen? Because I don't think they're gonna finish the year with this roster, and I don't think anybody thinks that.
I just think it's hard to trade Randall. Like the vibes,
I don't think they're gonna trade Randall.
So yeah, like, but if you're not, yeah. So okay, the roster is not gonna be the same, but it's gonna be bit part pieces, you know.
Peyton is a that's a bit part move.
Yeah, I fully endorse. All trade discussions involving Elfrid Payton. And I wish him the best. Well, whilst he's here, I'm going to try and enjoy him and rationalize why Tibbs plays him.
Because
there's definitely a reason.
They're 5-3. Like, that's the thing. When you're 5-3, when you had a 22.5 Vegas over-under, we really can't say shit.
How has Randall... this is what I don't get about his 7 assists a game. There's like one person he can pass to on the perimeter. So on all these drives, he's kicking out. So he's only got Reggie Bullock.
Wait, and that person hasn't even been hitting shots.
I'm like, what? Where are these just coming from? It's insane.
I will say this. I have watched a lot of his assists. The scorers in these games, and I don't think it's just the Knicks. I think scorers league-wide are
generous
when they I don't even think it wasn't Randall. It was somebody else. Maybe an RJ pass to Nerlens Noel at the top, like above the 3-point arc, and Nerlens Noel put a move on his guy and rolled all the way down the lane for a dunk, and they gave it
quite right. You know, RJ,
I could have thrown that ball.
We'll take it.
We will take it. Man, listen, there's so much more we... by the way, I did want to... I asked the question before because I wanted to give my own answer. I think it's going to be Kevin Knox.
They get traded.
No. Who I think is going to be like, why didn't we see this coming?
I hope you're right. He's taken big strides this year. Big strides for him are still baby steps, but
yeah,
he's better. He's being asked to do less, but he's doing the things that he's being asked to do better.
We'll take it.
Yeah, 100%. It's between him and Mitch. Like Mitch just looks so good. Every game he looks better.
Oh, that's what we need to talk about. So we'll finish up with Mitch.
I think it's actually, you can see it game to game. And he said on post game, you know, he spent a lot of time with Kenny Payne, and he's beginning to be able to use his body effectively. And he makes Rudy Gobert look small. Like he's just an absolute freak. And, you know, our defense is, but he's our defensive engine. Tibbs called Randall our offensive engine the other day. And Mitch is our defensive engine. As soon as he came out of the game against Utah, there's just like at the rim, layup, layup, layup.
That's why he played a career high in minutes, because Tibbs knew he couldn't take him off the floor.
It was, and he's staying on the floor, like, you know, oh, glorious. I don't know what more you can ask from him, honestly, so far this season.
You can't ask any more from him. And again, I always do this, getting ahead of ourselves. Like, what does that mean for the summer contract discussion?
Well, you have to think about it, yeah.
We'll worry about that when the time comes. Right now, I think if you're a Knicks fan, which you are, if you're listening to this podcast, why would anyone listen to this podcast if they were not a Knicks fan? I just thought of that. anyway, right. Like, you just got to be happy. I wanted to compare. So Gobert last night, 14 points, 12 rebounds, 5 blocks. So very good stat line. 7-for-9 from the field, 35 minutes. Was a minus 18. Donovan Mitchell was a minus 20 last night. How about that? Mitchell Robinson, 9 points, so less than Gobert's 14. 13 rebounds. Only 3 blocks, but 3 steals.
Yeah,
and played 41 minutes. It's just
It's the moments in between the box score moments that are vastly improved. You know, all the little minutiae and stuff that Dallas thrives on, that stuff is off the charts.
Well, because that's what wins games.
And I guarantee that as soon as he gets off the court, you know, he's looking at the film later and it's like clicking in his head. You can see it game to game. And he's, as well as Tibbs singing his praises, that's got to help. You know, the confidence and he's such a good motivator, the whole team. Yeah.
Well, I'm supposed to be on the media Zoom again on Friday before Friday's game. And I really do want to ask Tibbs about what he thinks of Mitchell Robinson's pick and roll coverage, because it's not perfect every time, but certainly not perfect, but it's really like everything you're saying. You could tell the progress is being made. And, you know, this is a starting center on a good team. That's, you know, which is good. That's what you want. It is good. By the way, I was wrong. 12 out of 32 is not 2 out of every 5 games. It is 3 out of every 8 games.
So changes everything, John. I'm not with you anymore.
God, I can't believe that. They only have to win if they win 3 out of every 8 games and do that 4 times. They're going to be 17-23 at the trade deadline.
And we haven't played any bad teams yet. Not that when you look through the schedule, there aren't many bad teams. But
I was looking at it the other day. There's not a lot of let up.
It's like, you know, every game is tough. But, you know, we haven't played – I think we haven't played teams that are a good matchup for us. Like, we're getting to the rim at a crazy rate on offense, and we're 28th in accuracy when we get there, which is like 57% or something.
I'm going to look this up as you're talking to get the updated numbers.
We have played teams that are at defending the rim. I think we've played them. Philly is first, Cleveland second, Indy's like seventh, Toronto and Milwaukee are no slouches. We've played like really, really elite rim defensive teams when we are a team that live at the rim.
Here, can I give you here are the top teams in the league at defending the rim in terms of accuracy, not preventing shots at the rim, defending the rim.
Once you get there.
Philly, 1. Cleveland, 2. Atlanta, 3. Indiana, 7. So that's 5 of our games right there. Utah, 12. And then Toronto, 14. So literally, did I miss it?
Milwaukee's good. I mean,
Milwaukee is 22nd, but they also, I mean, traditionally they allow less shots at the rim than anywhere. Yeah. And then, in terms of how often we're shooting at the rim, we're down to three. Yeah. We were second for a bit there. Our accuracy was 30th. Is it still
30th? 28th, something like that.
28th. We're up to 28th.
Yeah, there you go.
God, Charlotte.
That's still a great shot. That's a great shot.
No, it's a fantastic shot. It's a great
57%.
Shot. Especially, it's a fantastic shot, especially when hand in hand with this is the other thing that we're really good at, which is offensive rebounding. And again, I'll check that now. I think we're still fourth or fifth or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So look, there's a, and this is, which we got to end at some point. This is what Fizdale tried to do last year. Except he did it with a mallet as opposed to Tibbs is introducing more of a fine tooth comb.
Fizdale's offense last year was exactly what Kenny Payne described as being the reason that the offense wasn't working in the first half last night. It was one pass shot or it was just shot. And it was Bobby Portis, Marcus Morris, Julius Randle, post-ups and isolations, static, and you know, it's too easy to defend.
Well, my own little fetish, for whatever reason. See, for you, it's shooting. For me, it's passing. I'm always, and it's not, listen, again, assists are not a bullshit stat, but it's not perfect. but I always pay attention to that assist percentage. It would mean so much to me if they stayed in the top half of the league, and they're down to 19th.
But that's because no one can score.
Well,
if we get Burks quickly and Rivers, healthy all at the same time, that will make a massive difference.
And yet they're 16th in effective field goal percentage. If you would have told me before the season that the Knicks
yeah.
would be 16th in effective field goal percentage and they're missing everything at the rim. It's like,
yeah,
you can't see, it's all good things. Okay, we're gonna go. Yeah. My wife is probably ready to kill me at this point. This was so much fun. I really do. I could talk to you for. I said the same thing to Dallas. I could talk to him for hours. I could talk to you for hours.
Oh man. One day we'll do it in person.
Yes, over cup of tea or perhaps something else.
A Guinness.
I actually finished my last. I don't know what they have by you here. The draft in a can.
Yeah.
It's they come in packs of four.
Yeah, same.
And I always feel like, because I go shopping like Saturday and Sunday mornings, so I always feel a little funny about being the degenerate who is like, you know, here's like the grandma getting her like carrots, and then behind me is like the mom getting like the baby food, and like here's me at 8:30 on a Sunday morning. Here, can you ring up these 6 4 packs of Guinness? So I usually only get like one at a time, and it's only four cans.
Yeah.
You know, so that's unfortunate. So I'm out of Guinness right now as we speak.
Well, we'll have one in a pub. Like that's how you should drink Guinness, in a pub. So in the year 2030, when humans can be in the vicinity of each other, we'll have a Guinness. And we can celebrate one of Kevin Knox or Frank Ntilikina being good.
I was about to say Frank Ntilikina or Kevin Knox's eighth consecutive All-Star selection.
There you go.
Can you please tell the folks at home where they could find you?
Yeah. So on Twitter, it's Knicks_nuance. And I'm just writing for the Strickland. Shout out the Strickland. All good stuff. So, yeah, I don't have anything in particular planned, but I'm sure I'll find something else to write about next week.
This was amazing. Listen, you could tell when I'm really enjoying one of these things. This was a lot of fun. You're a better writer than you are a podcast. You are just, I read your stuff and it's really good. So I will say it when it is true, and it is true. Your stuff is excellent.
Oh, I appreciate that.
All right, I'm going to blame you if they lose tomorrow night, or tonight on Friday, because you know, we've had a run of guests here that only good things happen after the podcast. So I hope it will continue.
Well, yeah. We're not going to lose. No,
we're never going to lose again. It's going to, what am I talking about? 17 and 23. They're going to be, 37-3. Thank you everybody for listening to another episode of the Knicks Film School podcast. We will be back with you with another episode coming at you on Monday with me and Jeremy after the Denver game. So until then, everybody enjoy your weekend, and we will talk to you soon.